time right now for our first Sunday political roundtable, and they are in house. I don't know if they need an introduction or not, but anyway, Happy New Year to all those of the political community.
Happy New Year.
Thank you very much. I'm glad you guys agree on one thing, that it is a new year, and you can be happy. But I don't know about that either. Anyway, we have Nicholas Sawalk, Libertarian.
Morning, Jerry.
Did President Bush wait too late to send the $350 million?
I think he waited too late to make a public statement, but having worked in the relief community myself, it takes a while to get the wheels of government moving to actually get aid to the ground, and that's why I think that the outpouring from the American people and individuals has been so good.
Jim Pomeli, Republican.
Good morning.
Does this really help the face of America around the world?
Look, we're the largest public and private aid donor in the world. So, the folks who complain, it does seem like they're looking a gift horse in the mouth. We give more money privately and through God the government than any other nation in the world. We're the most generous nation in the world.
Okay, and Emily Leffler, the question is, Mr. Ehrlich, what do you think about Brother Ehrlich up there in Maryland's Annapolis, where he's saying to the doctors, I don't mind going along with you, but 2%, no taxes at all?
Yeah, I think he may have gotten himself in a fix, so we'll have to see if the doctors stand by him after this.
And Patrice, by the way, Emily Leffler is independent. Patrice McKinney, who is a Democrat. Well, I guess the question here is about Mayor Anthony Williams. Today they're going to install 3 new members of the D.C. Council. Is Anthony Williams in trouble now?
We'll see, Jerry. Some people say that this might be a referendum on Anthony Williams, but he's also accomplished a lot during his term as mayor.
Okay. Eric Mickelson, Green Party. Green Party, Eric Mickelson. Overall, this has been a tough week, certainly in the realm of politics. What about the new cabinet? And what's with the Homeland Security people?
Well, certainly the situation with Bernard Kerik was an embarrassment for the administration. I think that probably any future candidates will be vetted a little bit more heavily than this gentleman was.
Okay. As we continue on, then, let's get down to business. And I'll telephone number 301-230-0980, #980 in the Verizon Wireless System. Like to get you in on the discussion. Don't wait till we get off. Just get on in and say what you have to say. I think we have Eleanor Holmes Norton on the line. We do not have Mrs. Norton on the line. We're supposed to talk with Congresswoman Eleanor Holmes Norton because, Jim, tomorrow there's going to be a big town meeting on why the kids who are sent to overseas representing the District of Columbia, they have no representation, but yet they're going over and they're giving their lives and paying taxes.
Oh, I believe they have her.
I would know that you disagree with that.
I believe they have her.
Voting representation, Jim.
Voting representation.
Oh, they got to vote for president. And let me put it this way. I'm the only native. I'm not sure about you. No, you're not either. I believe I'm the only native Washingtonian on the panel.
I beg your pardon.
Are you?
Fifth generation Washingtonian.
Amen to that. So you and
that's
I are the only.
I thought you were from Maryland. Maryland.
Oh, I'm sorry. My fault.
Me? Maryland? I love Maryland.
Anyway, well, you and I are the only D.C. natives on the panel. And this is nothing new. It's in the Constitution. That's the way it goes.
Anyway, let's wait till we get the Congress. She's on the line. Good morning, Congresswoman Norton.
Good morning, Jerry Phillips. Happy New Year to you.
Happy New Year to you. We have a panel, as you know, our political experts here. And tell us a little about the special town meeting tomorrow.
Well, it's a special public recognition of 3 young men, 2 of them could be redeployed, who fought in on the front lines or were in the first wave on the front lines in Iraq, of course without a vote, as we approach January 30th, when the voting representatives they fought for are about to be elected in Iraq, while they have no voting representatives here. We think that regardless of where people stood in this war, that it's time to recognize these young men, and through recognition of them, perhaps, to make the country understand what it means not only to pay taxes, without representation in the House and the Senate, but to go to war without the same representation that we have now successfully fought for in Afghanistan and Iraq. These 3 young men from Dunbar, Blue, Eastern High Schools, 2 of them were in college. 1 of them was married. His child was born 12 hours after he left. None of them complain about their service. They were all in the Army Reserves. They're proud to have served their country. But in conversations with a member of my staff, who is one of them who went to Iraq, they decided that it was time for them to step forward and speak up for voting rights for the people of the District of Columbia in light of the coming elections in Iraq on January the 30th.
So this will take place tomorrow?
This will take place tomorrow at noon. They wrote to the leaders of the House, and Mr. Hastert, the Speaker, and the Democratic leader, Nancy Pelosi, and asked for a meeting. Ms. Pelosi will meet with them tomorrow at 11 o'clock. There will be a photo opportunity at 11:30 at her office.
Mm-hmm.
At 12 o'clock, there will be a public recognition of these three young men by the citizens of the of the District of Columbia. That's going to be in room 2203, room 2203 in the Rayburn House office building.
Now, Jim Pomley is Republican on our panel, but let me ask both you and Jim Pomley. Representative Tom Davis has been extremely supportive of your efforts, Congresswoman Norton, on this whole issue of representation. How does this come into play? Have you heard from Congressman Davis's office for support?
That's an interesting question, since what these veterans are asking for as a down payment on voting rights is the return of the vote on the House floor in the so-called Committee of the Whole that we won in 1993. So for 1 year, sorry, 2 years, I voted on most House business, about 80% of House business. The Republicans then took control of the House and literally withdrew this vote from the District of Columbia. So the first thing we're asking for is restoration of that vote. Tom Davis and a number of other Republicans have supported restoration of that vote. And, of course, Tom has introduced a bill to at least give us voting representation in the House. He said he doesn't see how you can say with a straight face that the District of Columbia should have no voting representation.
Right.
But do you support that bill?
Which bill?
Tom's bill to give Utah and D.C.
I very much encourage Tom's bill. I have not, in fact, given up on my bill. The only reason that I have not moved forward on Tom's bill is that Tom's bill depends upon something that apparently is not going to happen. He had a very novel idea that actually is a very traditional idea, that if you gave a vote to Utah, which almost got a vote in the last census, that would balance out the district having a vote and take away the clearly political opposition of Republicans to the bill. Then the representative from Utah stepped forward and literally said, why should we fool with that? We are entitled now to not one but two representatives.
Mm-hmm.
And in fact has said he's not for this approach, so I don't see any reason for me to give up on my bill, although I very much appreciate what Tom has done and have worked and encouraged him all along. And if I may say so, two other Republicans have stepped forward with bills, and I have not, in fact, joined their bills. But I went to the House floor to thank them for doing so. And frankly, I think the fact of the Iraq War had something to do with the fact that these Republicans also came forward with different versions of voting representation. And I think when you have Republicans and Democrats stepping forward, at some point you are going to get voting rights.
Right.
Because you have both parties saying that you should have it. And then we can work out which kind of bill we should have.
Right. Congresswoman Norton, when will the event take place? Tomorrow, what time?
Tomorrow, 12 noon. Rayburn House Office Building, room 2203.
And you want people to come join and certainly give support?
We ask people from the city and the region to come and give public recognition. Wherever you stand on voting rights, wherever you stand on the Iraq War, this is not what this is about. There will be no discussion of the war. But we ask you to come and at least recognize these three young men who went to war without a vote.
Okay. Thank you very much, Congresswoman Norton, and a Happy New Year to you.
Thank you, Jerry Phillips.
All right. Have a good day. Congresswoman Eleanor Holmes Norton, Democrat for the District of Columbia, announcing a special meeting in the Sam Rayburn building tomorrow in support of three men who are actually going into to give service to the country. As she says, the fact that they do not have representation And that's the reason why this meeting is held. Now, I know, Jim Pomeroy, you want to jump on this.
Well, I wanted to ask her, but before you ask her another point, I don't think it's right to say that D.C. doesn't have voting rights.
But it doesn't.
No.
Well,
D.C.
You vote
residents
for
vote
but
for president, vote for commander-in-chief.
Yeah, but that's not represented in Congress, though.
She's bringing these soldiers into it. They voted for the commander-in-chief or voted against the commander-in-chief, as the case may be.
As much as Jim would like to think otherwise, the government is run beyond just the executive branch. There are other branches of government that it's important for
citizens. There's the Constitution, and there's the Constitution that the D.C. is following and needs to follow.
Which has been amended in the past to grant voting rights to those not originally included.
If you want to amend it. Don't try different, bills.
Well, that's just one of the ways.
This is exactly what's being
discussed. There's one way to do it. There's one way to do it. An amendment.
A full legal analysis was done on this issue this summer by Tom Davis and his group, and they have determined that this would be something that is permissible constitutionally. Tom Davis is a Republican. It's a fundamental fairness issue, representation without taxation without representation.
But Tom's not talking about giving a D.C. two senators.
Excuse me, we do want to move on. I'll telephone number 301-230-0980, pound 980 on the Verizon wireless system. I would like to turn to Mr. Sawalk, Nicholas Sawalk, Libertarian. The Bush White House has concern, is the concern of the Bush White House over Homeland Security now kind of fading now that the elections are over. Point in view, the administration hasn't found a director after the, what is his name, Carrick?
Bernie Carrick.
And the color code system, and this was brought to our attention, folks, not my opinion, the color code system has not been talked about. Since November. In other words, we haven't seen brown, orange, red, or blue.
I think we're still yellow.
Are we still yellow?
I think so.
Stuck on that one. Anyway.
There was yellow with some orange patches.
Oh, I get
in D.C. and New York, and I think they went back to all yellow.
What's happening to Homeland Security is my question.
Homeland Security is being exposed for the feel-good joke that it is. It's not an American thing to have this giant internal security bureaucracy with color codes and people getting up on TV telling you to buy duct tape and armies of bureaucrats at the airports making you take your shoes off and take your belt off and patting you down and feeling up women. The TSA is a ridiculous agency that needs to be disbanded tomorrow. Somehow we've managed to spend twice as much money, have twice as many people in the airport, and yet it takes longer to get through security. We have more complaints from women who have been improperly fondled by security agents in full view of the rest of the traveling public. And it's not an effective agency. I'm not surprised they can't find anyone else to stand at the head of it. It's a politically untenable position to be in.
Well, personally, Jerry, I don't think the Bush administration is ever going to let go of Homeland Security because it's the only way they look like they're doing anything about terrorism at all.
The issue of Homeland Security isn't about women being improperly fondled in airports. This is a very important agency, and it truly needs to be handled properly. This is a development in the circumstances of our country. We have an extreme need for Homeland Security. We have to shift the way our whole defense system is structured, and Homeland Security has become an important part of it. And to undermine it and to say that it's not important, it's not working, but it is very important, and I would love to see the administration take it seriously and develop a well-developed, well-funded, and well-organized Homeland Security department.
Eric Mickelson.
Well, again, I think we probably would all agree that having the intelligence services that can protect us from terrorists and outside threats is important. I tend to agree with Nicholas that the Department of Homeland Security, when it was created, was more window dressing. Really, basically, it was an additional layer of bureaucracy on these already existing agencies. And it took a lot of actions to make it look like we were safer, when in fact, I think there's serious question as to whether the actions that they were taking were actually making us safer.
Creating an agency that's allowed to create secret no-fly lists and have regulations that it doesn't have to show anyone and submit the American people to indignities as we fly back and forth inside our own country is not necessary, and I disagree completely with
our
the three. Our
telephone number 301-230-0980, pound 980, the Verizon Wireless System. First Sunday political debate in session right now with our politicians, all political representatives, Nicholas Sawalk, Libertarian, Republican Jim Pomeroy, Independent, Emily Loeffler, and Patrice McKinney, Democrat, and from the Green Party, Eric Mickelson. Your voice is important in this forum as we discuss various issues of the day. 301-230-0980, pound 980 on Verizon. It is a very important issue, Homeland Security. Let me go around the panel and ask one question. How much will it survive, and will it get the attention that it got before November?
I'm hoping it goes away.
Nicholas Sawalk. Okay, Jim Pomeroy.
Well, look, one thing about, with Homeland Security, you know, everyone can complain about Homeland Security and about these regulations and so on and so on, but if something happens, everyone is going to wish the regulations were even tougher. It's a no-win situation.
Right, and let's go to Eric Mickelson.
Well, you know, again, will it survive after the election? I think it'll still be around.
The election's over, but I mean...
Right. I think it's still going to be utilized. It'll be interesting to see how, the next head of the department, the direction that he or she takes the department in.
Patrice McKinney, Democrat.
I think Homeland Security Department is here to stay. It needs a major overhaul. The incorporation of FEMA, I think, was an added layer of complexity that wasn't necessary. The Homeland Security needs an overhaul, but it needs to stay.
And Emily Loeffler, Independent.
Well, this was the first major federal expansion since the 1940s. I don't think it's going to disappear overnight, but I think it's received decreasing amounts of attention since it was first established, and I think barring a major scandal, nothing is going to happen in terms of overhauling it.
Emily Loeffler, since you have the microphone, I'll come back to you. You said that in my question about Eric, Governor Eric in Maryland and the Maryland medical malpractice fight. Last week, Governor Ehrlich called a special session in Annapolis of the General Assembly to address the issue of malpractice. The governor got together with everybody, and it seems as though Mike Miller, along with Mr. Bush and the Mike Bush, who is the head of the House on the General Assembly of Maryland, they got together and came up with a bill. And the bill seemed to suit everybody on the House floor as well as the Senate floor in the General Assembly, and a lot of doctors liked the idea. But he called for a 2% tax on HMOs. Governor Ehrlich says no way will he ever pass a bill. He'll veto this one, and definitely no taxes. Does this put Ehrlich in trouble?
I think it puts him in a fix, as I said earlier. And I think that, he had the backing of a lot of medical associations, a lot of doctors trying to find a good solution for this. But, you know, he's pulled back from this bill now. And I think, you know, a lot of these associations and doctors who supported him are now saying, well, wait a minute, that's, you know, not what we talked about. So I think it's going to be a difficult situation, and we'll have to see how we handle it.
Can you have a fair malpractice bill without taxing HMOs, Jim Pomeroy? And then I'll come to my friend.
Sure you can. And here's, I think the doctors' groups are the ones that need to be very concerned, because they convinced the governor to go in on their behalf and try to get some malpractice reform. And then once they went through the procedure, some of these doctors' groups have abandoned the governor because they figured they can get some money from this new tax. If they're going to switch horses in the middle of the stream, no one's going to do them any favors anymore.
Nicholas Sawalk.
Well, the first question that I would ask is why it was that Governor Ehrlich's insurance commissioner approved a 33% rate hike in medical malpractice and essentially creating this problem. The second thing is that a tax on HMOs, we should be really clear when we talk about it. A 2% tax on HMOs is a 2% tax on people like me who are part of HMOs. The tax will go straight through to the individual consumers who already are paying a lot of money for health care. So I think that the House is in kind of a fix to explain why it is that they need to charge the individual health care consumer 2% more in order to put money in the pocket of the insurance companies.
Okay. Let's move on. I'll telephone number 301-23. I'm sorry, Patrice.
Yeah, Jerry, the other thing I wanted to point out is that we have an interesting situation in Maryland coming up on January 11th, because we have got a veto override session coming up, and it's not only a veto on the medical malpractice issue, but there are two other vetoes that that they're going to be looking at to override. That's the cap on higher education and the living wage.
That's another story.
Right. And I think these continuous veto overrides, and there were actually a number last year, really show Governor Ehrlich's ineffectiveness in a lot of ways. That basically he's tried to push sort of a very conservative agenda, and he's out of step, I think, with what the majority of Marylanders really.
301-230-0980, #980 on Verizon Wireless System. Rich in Alexandria, good morning.
Yeah, I want to go back to your comments about the Department of Homeland Security. As a criminal investigator working in the federal government, I could tell you that all it did, it was a knee-jerk reaction to try to reorganize the various departments, and all it did was add another layer of bureaucracy. The infighting that it currently exists in various agencies existed before, and now they're all under one roof, and it makes it even harder to do your job. I think what needed to be done was reorganize the missions and make it more specific and put money where it needed to go, as opposed to creating a huge bureaucracy and then taking money away and putting it in the Department of Defense. The budgets for the Department of Homeland Security, especially the criminal investigative units, has gone down. They're having to park cars. The reports were in the Washington Post as to the ineffectiveness of the Department of Homeland Security. So I'd like to see how your panel discusses that.
Okay, thank you very much, Rich, for your call. By the way, on telephone number 301-230-0980, #980, the Verizon Wireless System. I have lines open as we talk with our first Sunday political panelists here on various issues. What about that?
Well, I'd just like to agree with Rich on the idea that we can reorganize our missions to focus on Homeland Security without creating an actual department called Homeland Security with a big building and layers of bureaucracy. The idea that we can only be safe if we have a named cabinet level position called Homeland Security is ridiculous.
Okay. 301-230-0980, #980 on the Verizon Wireless System. You guys are a little slow here for the first of the year. I mean, I'm looking at you. You look like you're, too much partying or something? Do politicians party in Washington?
Well, I'm just sitting here, just being very pleased about President Bush being reelected, and I'm rolling my eyes at some of the comments I'm hearing.
Here we go.
We were all just kind of kicking back and relaxing like our president's been doing in Crawford for the last couple weeks.
See, there's where the eye rolling comes in.
Let's turn to the District of Columbia. Do you want to turn to the District of Columbia?
Love to. I love the district.
A lot of things have happened in the District of Columbia. I have a new school superintendent, and they've had all kinds of a baseball fight and stuff like that. And, well, it's come out now where the district will get baseball. Anyway, they had an election, too, in November. And they elected three new people to go to the D.C. Council. They will be installed this afternoon. One of the persons, the former mayor, Marion Barry, representing Ward 8. And it was a surprise to many people, many of us in journalism, who covered the district and everything. It was a big surprise. But like the old people say, the hawks say, he won because people in Ward 8 want to be heard. Now we find that he's going to have a very important role on the D.C. Council, as well as Kwame Brown, who's the at-large candidate, a new young man, is already saying, hey, we're going to have jobs in these new stadiums, and Vincent Gray from Ward 7. Anyway, the question is, will we see a new D.C. council, a more progressive D.C. council, and is this going to be a thorn in the rosy days of Mayor Anthony Williams? Jim Pomeroy.
Well, I knew Marion Barry was going to win. I told people before it happened, he was definitely going to win. The guy's a great politician, and he has a lot of potential on the council, but the problem is, his actions don't always match the rhetoric. But let me say, Mayor Williams has done a fine job. And to the extent that the city council tries to tear him down, I think they're going to tear down the image of the city. I think this thing over baseball was an absolute disaster.
But is disagreeing tearing down?
No, it's not disagreeing. Let me put it this way. Looking at this whole baseball situation, regardless of whether you were for baseball or against baseball, the fact that you had the leader of the city council going back and forth, changing her mind every couple of days as to where she stood on a contract that had already been signed, and the rest of the council fighting back and forth. If you're a serious business do you want to come into D.C. and do business? I mean, is D.C. I mean, it hurts the reputation of D.C. regardless of whether you were for it or against it.
The bottom line is it went through.
It did. Finally, they agreed. Finally, they ratified the contract that they had signed earlier.
Often things are contention, and in fact, the efforts of Councilwoman Kropp improved the deal.
The core is, regardless of whether the deal is good, bad, or indifferent, when you make an agreement with a corporation,
she didn't.
You
make the
don't.
I saw her at the press conference.
Folks,
we can't talk together. We can sing together. Let's get the facts. The press conference was not an agreement. The press conference was an announcement of what?
Of an agreement that they agreed to.
Who's they?
The people up on stage wearing baseball hats and cheering.
No, they did not make the agreement. Mayor Anthony Williams made the agreement. Jack Evans made the agreement. All people in the District of Columbia and the council did not make the agreement.
If Linda Kropp goes to the announcement of the event, says she supports it.
Hold it.
If that doesn't mean anything, then signing agreements in D.C. doesn't mean anything.
The mayor had no right to sign an agreement without the approval of the city council.
Number one, I don't want to get to baseball, folks. We've discussed that enough. I'm asking about the three people being stalled today.
Can I make a quick point? The three people who were elected and beat the incumbents because they opposed baseball. The reason that there was such a scramble was, had the vote about the contract gone after today, it would have failed.
Right.
The people of D.C. have spoken and said they do not want to pay for a baseball stadium. Mayor Williams is on his way out because he put his entire political career on it. And I think Linda Kropp is probably, she's on the edge.
Well, Mayor Williams says that he's going to announce this month, the end of this month, whether he will run again for re-election or not. But there are those who are saying that, one, he shouldn't run. There are those who say that he will not run. Let me turn to my friend Eric Mickelson.
Well, I know you don't want to get back to baseball, but I just want to ask one question. Why is it considered poor form when the city council basically refuses to be extorted by Major League Baseball? I wish cities around the country would finally stand up once and for all and say, no, the public is not going to finance these corporate welfare projects for billionaires and millionaires.
Hear, hear.
You know, also, Jerry, you may not be far away from baseball. Baseball's not over yet because this new city council could in fact reverse this.
And that's what a lot of people understand, that the legislation could, with a bill, they could reverse it. But I think what a lot of people will say, from some of the people I've talked with who are really in on this, they say that, okay, but the rider will be that they find more monies, but there's going to be a lot of amendments to it. Let's talk to Mike in Woodbridge. Good morning, Mike.
Jerry, I want to make quick comments about some of the stuff you talked about. First, the young men who live in D.C., serving in Iraq. First of all, I want to say I appreciate their service and what they're doing. The one thing that I think that has to be stressed is, if there was a draft, I would be a little bit more sympathetic to them.
Mm-hmm.
They knew what they were getting into. They made the choice to join the armed forces.
Mm-hmm.
So they knew what they were getting into, that there would be a risk that they would fight for this country one day.
Right.
So there's where my sympathy lies on that.
Mm-hmm.
Number two, with the situation, I'm a Virginia resident. Tort reform has got to be taken care of. The lawyers' fees and everything that's going on with the liability and everything with the insurance. You're not going to solve any of the medical problems until that is taken care of.
Right.
And number three, I know you don't want to talk about baseball. One thing that needs to
be addressed. That's okay. I just don't want to linger on too much.
Well, one thing I wanted to mention about Ms. Kropp, Jerry Reinsdorf, who was on Major League's negotiating committee, has already said that she was in on the negotiations and she knew fully on what was happening. So let's throw that myth away that she didn't know what was going on, and I'll let you go. Thank you.
Hey, Mike. Yeah. Mike, thank you very much, and Happy New Year to you, my friend.
Happy New Year to you.
Okay, 301-230-0980, #980, the Verizon Wireless System. Our lines are open. We have about 5 more minutes with our panel because there's so much happening. The panelists are so nice to be with us and to work with us with all that's happening around the world. But anyway, here's Eric Mickelson, who travels around the world often.
Well, I just want to respond to a couple of Mike's points. The first point with regards to the soldiers being drafted, certainly soldiers have been drafted from the district in World War II, the Korean War, the Vietnam War, these other, conflicts.
You may have a draft.
And there could be. Who knows? But regardless, the issue is young men have been drafted from D.C. and not had voting representation. On the second issue, again, getting back to tort reform or whatever people want to call it, I think the fundamental issue with medical malpractice is malpractice. What we have is, if there were no malpractice, there wouldn't be malpractice lawsuits.
But we got into this wave of lawsuits on even ants crawling across Pennsylvania Avenue. You'd sue the ant, you know. Haven't we been into this wave? I mean, this has been a discussion on Capitol Hill that we have got to do something about lawsuits. Period.
When
Edwards ran, trial lawyer. There was that fear within the halls. Have you straightened things out in the Democratic Party yet? But anyway, there was that fear that because he's a trial lawyer, dealing with this very thing, it might jeopardize him.
I want to make a quick point that gets lost a lot when we talk about medical malpractice, is that doctors, as a rule, do not police themselves as well as they should. When a doctor does do some sort of malpractice, minor malpractice, the other doctors tend to rally around them, and hospitals tend to rally around them and fight off any allegations that they might be doing a bad job. And we have to look at what the doctors have control of. They have control over their own members, and they need to exercise some of that before they come to the table going, I can't afford malpractice.
But is this not an example of not only the medical industry, but all industries in America that were deregulated in the 1980s? Deregulation, remember, we don't want government telling us what to do, folks.
There was no deregulation of the medical industry.
The medical industry is one of the most regulated industries around.
That's overregulated in the 70s the HMO Act.
You just said doctors aren't.
No, doctors self-police just like lawyers do.
Well, to me, it's what? Without regulation, if they self-control themselves.
What I'm saying is, one of the things that you can do to a doctor is you can get his privileges taken away at a hospital. But if you make a complaint against a doctor at a hospital, the hospital board rallies around the doctor and tries to fight you off instead of actively investigating it themselves.
Let's get Bill in Rockville. Good morning, Bill.
Yes, good morning. I just wanted to make a comment that the gentleman that called earlier, Dave, I'm not sure if that was his name, he had stated that, these soldiers know what they signed up for when they signed on the dotted line to reservists and National Guard members, and that's all fine and good. And I'm sure they're well aware of what they signed for. When there's war, they will respond to war as they have. But when you go to war, generally you go to war and you're there for a minimum for a year's tour, 12 months, no more than that. Then you're given an opportunity to come home and regroup and maybe go for a second tour, maybe a year later. But what's going on with these troops now is that they're being extended well over a year and asked to continue to extend. And I don't agree with that. And that's not what they signed for.
Actually, it is exactly what they signed for. It's in the contract that everyone signs when you join the military. And, it is an unusual circumstance, and I wish they didn't have to serve longer tours myself. But, it is in the contract.
Okay. Let me say this. I bet you, I'm pretty sure that 80 or 90% of those soldiers that did sign, signed it in good faith. And if you ask them now, they said, were you aware of this? I bet you they would say no.
Okay. Thank you very much. Appreciate your call, Bill. And we have about 1 minute. Emily Leffler and then Patrice McKinney.
Well, actually, to reiterate what Jim said and to back up our own Secretary of Defense, we go to war with the army that we have. And if we're not prepared, then that's something that we need to look at beforehand. I'm saying if we have inadequate numbers, that's something that we need to look at in the beginning.
My goodness.
So Emily wants a draft.
No, I'm saying that this is the dialogue we should have had 2 years ago.
You're going to get a draft. Will you get a draft? Yes or no? No comment. Yes or no? Yes?
Of course not.
That's what Mr. Bush said.
That's what everybody says.
Yes or no?
I have my doubts.
We already have a backdoor draft going on. We've been talking about it right here.
Oh. It depends on what happens with Iran.
Oh, boy. Okay. We got to close out, folks. I know that the only reason why we're taking time for...
Thank you, Chair.
I want to thank the panelists this morning, Nicholas Sawalk, along with Jim Pomeney, Emily Leffler, Patrice McKinney, and Eric Mickelson. Last year, we lost a lot of people, from show business, politicians, and all. But I can't help, as a broadcaster, to think in the beginning of this year that we remember two people who did so much for our country. One, the late President Ronald Reagan, and definitely a man who appeared with Ronald Reagan in one of his last concerts, and that is Ray Charles. He died last year. But when he sang America, we all were united. And behind George Bush this week, we unite to help the people of South Asia and of East Africa. For Clear Channel Radio, I'm Jerry Phillips. Yes, it is.